Intentional Grounding is brought to you by CJ Wilson Mazda and the Zoom Zoom Nation. Let me tell you one thing about CJ Wilson Mazda. They are not your typical dealership. There are no suits, no high pressure sales, just regular people who treat you like a neighbor. And they have special monthly incentives all month long, which make it a great time to buy or trade. The other thing you should know is that the good people at CJ Wilson Mazda are always trying to make your car shopping fun. You can test drive a CJ Wilson Mazda in Orland Park, Countryside, and Lake Villa, and always online at ZoomZoomNation.com. Let's go.
We'll look at the tape.
It's Intentional Grounding.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hope.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
All right, welcome in to episode 66 of Intentional Grounding. The Clyde Bulldog Turner episode. Kind of old school guy, played in the 40s. His number is retired by the Bears, though.
Yeah. I knew it was retired, but I couldn't tell you when he played. I wasn't even an imaginary thought in my family's process or lineage at that point.
Your parents may not have been alive yet.
That is true. They were not alive at that point.
Mine weren't. Mine were not alive yet. He played from 1940 to 1952. Get this, he played center and linebacker his entire career. He played both ways.
Yeah. I love that all those old school guys were two-way players.
Yeah. And it's not like that anymore. Maybe that would help the Bears.
Kyle Long would help on both sides of the ball,
I'm sure. Yeah, he could play D-line.
Akeem Hicks, he could open up a few holes there, for Jordan Howard, I'm sure.
Wisconsin tried that with Joe Thomas in college. He tore his ACL playing defense and had to come back for his senior year.
Yeah.
It worked out okay for him, though.
I think he just did just fine.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer. All right, this is Adam Hogue and Adam Johns. Johnsy sounds a little differently because we have kind of a makeshift episode this week with Thanksgiving going on. We're recording early on in the week for a couple reasons. The most obvious being that we don't want to be doing a podcast on Thanksgiving, but because we usually do these on Thursday, but also with the holiday travel and everyone's driving around and flying places on Wednesday, we want to make sure that you have this podcast a day early to take along with you on your travels this week. So it works out in that regard. And you can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S, and the podcast on Twitter at INT Grounding Pod. WGNRadio.com/Bears is where you can read myself. You can read Adam Johns at ChicagoSunTimes.com and follow, subscribe for free to the podcast by searching Intentional Grounding on iTunes. And Adam, we are not in the same place today as we record this on a Tuesday night trying to get this to our listeners early, but there was huge news in the last 24 hours or so, because Jay Cutler, well, let's make it official. Let's play the sounder. It's just not real news if I don't play that. So
it's official now.
It's official.
It means a little bit more.
Right. Jay Cutler, he's hurt. Here's the deal. Because we're recording this early on in the week, we don't exactly know the extent of Jay Cutler's shoulder injury as we're recording this. We know it's not good, though. And here's the deal. There are reports out there that he tore his labrum in his throwing shoulder. Apparently, he's trying to get a second opinion, and that second opinion is probably going to determine whether or not Jay is out for the year. But regardless, I think we can still have a pretty deep discussion here on what this means for Jay and what this means for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, in the short term, it's Matt Barkley. You're bringing David Fales back. He was signed off the Baltimore Ravens practice squad. Mark Trestman is there no longer to protect him. So David Fales is coming back. He's your new backup quarterback. Matt Barkley is looking like your starter if Cutler can't go. But just forget about that. Adam, I want to talk about the long term, right? The big decisions, in my mind, come after the year. Look, all the signs point to this being Jay Cutler's last stand, that this is his final year because of the money's up in his contract. Yeah, big deal he signed a few years ago under Phil Emery. All the guaranteed money is up. This is a team that's rebuilding. He's the last player remaining from the Jerry Angelo era. So to me, look, I get why this is important right now, but to me, the big decisions are coming after the season.
Yeah, no question. And I think that the decision – well, how about this? Do you think it's been made completely yet?
No.
I don't.
Do you?
No, I've been beating this drum pretty hard. I mean, I still think you can get at least a mid-round draft pick for Jay Cutler.
Really? Damaged shoulder and all. He's clearly damaged goods at this point. Forget about his erratic on-the-field play. Forget about the false narrative that you're going to have to deal with if he comes to your team about him being a bad teammate. Look, he's a good teammate, but that's still headline-worthy things. But he's physically damaged goods at this point, and he's well into his 30s.
Well, and that's why I was going to get to what this injury, how it changes things, because you're right. The injury, I don't think, helps the Bears in any kind of pursuit. Well, obviously, it doesn't help them in any kind of pursuit to trade Jay Cutler. Look, he's not a pitcher, so it's not like you're worried that this torn labrum at, you know, in his 30s is going to end his career, but it's something that you certainly, at a minimum, impacts your offseason if you're trying to acquire the guy, right? Because you're at the time you trade for him, you're going to be trading for a guy who probably is not able to throw a football for you.
Right. You know, look, I've done, I don't know if research is the right word, but I've talked to a lot of football types in the medical side, in the front office side. Look, there's different degrees to shoulder injuries, specifically the labrum. You look at Kyle Long. He's got a damaged labrum in his left shoulder, but they never put a brace on him, right, to limit his movements. Sure, maybe they shot him up every now and then. You know, it comes down to a guy's pain tolerance a lot of these times, but you know, talking to some of these NFL types, you know, whether it's the medical side or the front office side, people just – labrum injuries are kind of common, you know, and you don't really know how bad they are until the player's pain tolerance is up, if you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. You know, if you think about it, so many things are jolting to that shoulder, whether it's a fall, you know, maybe a bad throw by a quarterback, you know, a bad block where you get twisted or something like that. So many things – can go violently wrong for your shoulders that there's going to be damage inside of them. But these tears that they can happen to that labrum, they vary. And it comes down to how well a player can handle the pain in some situations because, you know, in some cases, that labrum tear won't even be discovered if the player can handle the actual pain, if you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I do. And it's also... I think it's interesting that the Bears aren't even in a hurry to get the labrum fixed on Kyle Long. I mean, he's going to have it fixed eventually, but they're dealing with the ankle first. So that tells you, at least in terms of a timeline with Kyle's injury, that you know they're not worried about it impacting next season. Otherwise, they'd be rushing to get it done, and maybe they would have shut him down even earlier. But you know, in terms of Jay Cutler, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. And again, he's at the time of our recording here, they're still trying to figure out the damage and whether or not he's really going to be out for the entire season. Although that does seem, at a minimum, the Bears are taking another hit here with both their chances of winning any of these last six games and also what they could potentially get for Jay Cutler. But again, let's look at the contract. It's $12.5 million next year, okay? That's not that much for a quarterback anymore that you have seen here, even this season, despite Jay Cutler's awful performance in Tampa, does give you a much better chance of winning football games. So I still look at the NFL and how desperate teams can get for quarterbacks, And let's keep in mind that it does not look like a great draft class this year for quarterbacks. So before this injury, I really thought that the Bears could at least get a mid-round draft pick for Jay Cutler. I don't know necessarily what this injury does to that. But I also think that if you're the Bears, it's smart not to rush to a decision on Jay Cutler. Because, again, $12.5 million is it's actually kind of a bargain when you look at a guy like Brock Osweiler's contract.
Well, that's another. I don't know what the Texans are thinking. Maybe that's just old Texan rich oil money coming into the equation.
But the point is, there was that team last year. It seems like there's always a team willing to either give something up or spend a lot of money on a guy at the quarterback position.
But here's the thing. If you know that the Bears want to get rid of him, why don't you just wait for them to release him? You know what I'm saying? Like, the Bears don't have much bargaining position.
But why do they have to release him?
Because you're ready to move on.
But why? Just because?
Here's the thing.
Just because? That seems to be the argument. Just because.
Yeah. Well, hear me out. This whole concept of let's call it Jay fatigue. I've seen it used on Twitter. I know fans use it. I know that, look, he's the best, statistically he's the best quarterback the Bears have ever had, but he's been so up and down with his play that it's frustrated fans to no end, right? And I think just like with a lot of pieces in this organization, right, whether it's saying goodbye to Martellus Bennett, saying goodbye to Matt Forte. Let's go back to some stalwarts, I should say. You know, not re-signing Lance Briggs, not re-signing Charles Tillman, saying goodbye to Matt Forte, saying goodbye to Robbie Gould. There is clearly, I don't want to call it a purge, but there is a turning of a page. Going to a whole new chapter at Hallis Hall, right? And Jay Cutler is like the last remaining piece of that. You know what I'm saying? For better and for worse, right? I still think he's a very competent quarterback. I still think he can win you a lot of football games. I still think he's a better teammate than people ever want to say outside Chicago. But we know what's going on at Hallis Hall. This is a rebuild. They may not come out and say it, but it is. It's a big-time youth movement. And eventually, I think the quarterback has to become part of that youth movement. Okay, maybe Jay Cutler can be your bridge quarterback. But maybe Brian Hoyer can be too. That's all I'm saying. Where do you, just to go back to my original question, Adam, where do you stand on this whole concept, at least with fans, of Jay fatigue?
Well, it's there. There's no question. And I at the bottom line, you have to move on from Jay eventually. I just don't know that you have to be in a huge rush to do so, because like you said, I mean, if everyone knows that you're just going to dump him, well, then that's going to hurt his value. But maybe I'm just completely wrong about this. Maybe he's worth nothing. Maybe he, you know, even at $12.5 million, he's at 34 years old, he's worth nothing. You know, sometimes we get a feel for the market, and sometimes we're just guessing. And, you know, it is still November, so to know what the trade market's going to look like in March, we are sort of guessing at this point. But yeah, the fatigue is there. I think even within the organization, it's probably there. And at a minimum, and I've said this multiple times, I think they're already a year or two late in trying to find his replacement.
Yeah, I get that. You know,
and they're probably going to pay for it next year, because they're either going to have, even like best case scenario is one of these college kids turns out to be a dynamite franchise quarterback. He's still a rookie next year, and that's the best case scenario. More likely is you're taking a chance on a guy that you need to develop, and you might be running, like you said, Brian Hoyer out there. And I think we already saw Brian Hoyer's best this season, which was capable, which is maybe good enough to be a bridge guy for you, but still he's not going to go out there and win football games for you.
Right. You need a bridge guy, right, if you're going to draft a guy. And I think the Bears are completely leading towards drafting a guy. I mean, you know it. I know it. I think the whole social media world knows it. Ryan Pace has been out and about scouting games at the college level that include some of the best college prospects at quarterback, right? Brad Kaya from Miami, Deshaun Watson at Clemson, just to name a couple. I'm sure he's getting reports from all over the country and other guys. So that's there. So you can see the Bears kind of excuse me, trending that way. But that bridge player, do you want that bridge player to be a $12.5 million guy? Or do you want it to be a $3 million guy like a Brian Hoyer? And look, I know that Brian Hoyer, as good as he looked at times and as efficient as he was, he missed on some throws, and he didn't win the football games that maybe Jay Cutler could have done. But if you just look at the stats, and I think the Bears will look at the stats and all the efficiency ratings and things like that, Brian Hoyer has been better than Jay Cutler this season under Dow Loggins. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a little bit. Neither has been good enough, though. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah.
And look, I will admit this, that they're not going to be a quarterback away from winning the Super Bowl next year. Okay? So maybe you look at it that way and you go, well, we might as well pay Brian Hoyer $9 million less or even $10 million less because that's not going to be the difference. That's not going to make or break our season. And I think that, if anything, we learned in the last few weeks, I do think that there are young guys making progress on this football team, but they're not going to be ready to compete by next year. No way.
Yeah. Well, let me throw another thing out to you. I know that Jay Cutler is on record saying that he wants to stay here, loves it here, his family, you know, his wife and three kids are settled here. This is home to him. But what if he has a little Chicago fatigue? Maybe, I mean, you hear it all the time, that maybe a fresh start would do him some good. Maybe he's just sick of
how divisive of
a character he's become in Chicago. You know what I'm saying? You know, either you love him or hate him, and the people in between don't speak up enough, but he's become, he's a divisive figure. And I think a lot of that's unfair. I think he's, again, a better teammate and a better quarterback than some people want to give him credit for. But maybe he's a little tired of Chicago, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, what I'm interested in is how it would be, the dynamic of him walking into a different locker room. Because while I think you and I often talk about how he's miscast nationally, the reality is I think even in, you know, around the league with other players, some of them have formed their opinions around what they read and hear and watch on ESPN and the NFL Network and other places. So, you know, I guess the point I'm making is I don't know how easy it would be for him to win another locker room.
Yeah,
over.
He would have to, but even if he's traded or acquired or is released and signed, you know, I think there'll be some level of interest in him. But one, I think he'd walk in better than you think. You know, I think he's really changed over the past few years. But a lot of it will have to do with the head coach and the coordinator and the people that are kind of around him, right? Because let's face it, like some of the people, even to the Lovie Smith regime, I mean, some of those players, the leaders on that team, did not welcome this guy with open arms.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's what I mean. I mean, I'm not saying that Jay's going to do anything to jeopardize. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying because of kind of preconceived notions that it probably even existed back in 2009 when he showed up at Hall's Hall. That
yeah.
it's gonna be hard, especially if it's an established place, where you know they have guys that have been around there for a while. That's all I'm getting at. And I think do you think there's any chance he would retire?
You know, he's been through a lot.
Torn labrum too.
Yeah. I mean, his body's been...
Concussions.
Yeah, but I still think he has, to use a cliche, whatever, that competitive desire, that fire inside him to compete. He's a competitor, just like all the football players say every single day when we talk to him. You know, he wants to compete. I think that's still part of his makeup. And look, I mean, if he wants to move on or the Bears decide to move on, I think it would take the right situation for him for things to click. The right coaches would help. Maybe a good open locker room would help. You know, maybe one that's been kind of in need of a quarterback to come in and just kind of fill in and be better than what they've had before. But, you know, this is, you know, I think it might be trending that way. Look, I don't know. It's not for sure. We got to see even if he can play, you know, later this season. But, you know, this whole Jay Cutler speculation, it really has been a lot to digest.
Yeah, it has. It has. And by the way, we haven't even mentioned Jarrell Freeman, who was suspended 4 games for using PEDs. That's 2 in 2 weeks for this Bears team. And it's just like, it's kind of gotten to that point that it was in 2014 where every day we show up to Alice Hall, it's like, what now?
Yeah.
What's going to happen today?
Yeah, I don't think his, like some people were thinking that there's a PED problem at Alice Hall and all this. You know, look, when these guys leave the building, they go and work with their own trainers, their own nutritionists, their own massage therapists, their own cryogenicists or whatever. I mean, they do whatever they can to keep their bodies healthy, fit, to get better, you know, physically and all that. Sure, the teams don't like it, but it's just part of the nature because they can only have so much contact with them. And we know how physical demanding football is as a sport. It's just part of playing football, right? These guys making lots of money go out and get their own help. And sometimes they're just not getting the right help that they should. Look, and they had different reasons why Alshon Jeffrey had the inflammatory medicine or whatever that was recommended to him by whoever. And then you had Jarrell Freeman with a bad prescription. Maybe you should really check out what was going on there. And then what did Tyo Fabaluje have? Yeah, it was an appetite suppressant. I forget what Eagle Ferguson had. I don't know if he ever came out and was clean with it. I don't think he issued a statement.
Yeah, but in the history of football, no one's just come out and said, yeah, I needed an edge. I was looking for one.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I realize that they're not all cheating, but because no one has ever come out and just admitted that, it's hard to believe them. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing, like, a lot of it is just having them do their due diligence. You know, they don't want to get caught and get that stuff if they do think they're cheating. I think some of these guys do make honest mistakes. They're just being careless with what they're doing, and they're trusting people around them that those people have to be more diligent in what they're recommending and things like that.
Well, you would think with the money that they're losing that they would be a little bit more careful.
Yes, but it's, I mean, you know these guys. Sometimes they're just careless in their behavior. That's how some of these guys are just to begin with. You know, I don't think Jarrell Freeman is like that at all. I think Alshon Jeffrey is more, I think he's a smarter player than he lets on and people believe from the outside that he is. But, you know, have you looked at the NFLPA site and you know, what's banned and what they can't take? And you got all these scientific names and everything.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then they got that app, which is confusing the players because, you know, yeah, they want you to use it, but, you know, hey, we kind of warn you not to use it because some of these supplement providers may not list all the chemicals they're putting in it, you know, so there's so many things. And you walk around Hallis Hall, look at that locker room, Adam, you know it. These guys have tubes and barrels full of stuff and pills and, you know, powders and all sorts of stuff that they ingest and, you know, stuff they do to, whether to increase weight, lightly, you know, add mass, all this stuff. It's all there at Hallis Hall.
Yeah, it is, and it's impossible to ignore it because it's right there in front of your face. But, you know, I get that it's complicated. I have some sympathy, but I also don't, because they also have so many resources that, you know, most people don't, and you just got to be careful. And in this case, for the last 2 weeks, two players have not been careful, and they've been flagged. So, let's see, just since non-injury, well, basically since the end of Sunday's game, which had 4 starters go down, you have now also lost arguably your most consistent defensive player all season long and your starting quarterback. So, I mean, the hits just keep coming here with this team.
Don't forget your best receiver, and that's not Alshon Jeffrey either. Zach Miller broke his foot.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. I mean, that since Sunday, it's, I mean, we kind of knew Sunday how bad that was, but I'm just saying, since the game got over, they lost two more key guys. It's just, it's never, it seems like it's never ending here with this team. But six games to go, and we got to break one of them down right now. Sunday, the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota, the guy that we know Ryan Pace liked and would have loved to have in the draft 2 years ago. He comes to town with the Titans, who are improving as a football team. And this is not going to be an easy game. The Bears are actually 3.5-point underdogs, which I think they should be. And it'll be interesting to see also, you know, does this line move at all, depending on what's going on at the quarterback situation. But I think right now we're pretty sure that Jay Cutler's not going to play. It's a noon game Sunday on CBS. Adam, what are your two big questions going into this game?
What can Nick Kwiatkowski do at linebacker? That's my first, because, look, they wanted to get this rookie some playing time to begin with, but Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman were both playing pretty well. They're every down, three down players, right? I mean, you're not going to take those guys off the field. Kwiatkowski got in a little bit in Tampa, but that game was out of hand. What are you going to do with this rookie? Because he's obviously a guy you believe in for the future. He's already beaten out, at least depth chart-wise. He's above Christian Jones. He's above John Timu. He's above Jonathan Anderson. I mean, this is a guy that needs to get playing time. This is a guy you drafted in the fourth round. So I want to see what the kid can do.
Yeah, I agree. And the silver lining here is that he's going to get a lot of playing time these last 6 weeks. And you'll get a good chance to evaluate Nick Kwiatkowski. And let me actually correct this line, because it has moved just since earlier in the day when I wrote these lines down. The Bears are 5-point underdog.
Wow.
I think
it started at 1.
Yeah.
1 to 3.5 to now 5. Okay.
Yeah, but that was before. I mean, anyone had any idea what was going on with Jay Cutler? And, I mean, I can't blame him moving 4 points when you see what this offense did with Matt Barkley in Green Bay a month ago. And by the way, that team hasn't won a football game since, the Green Bay Packers, since they did that to the Bears last month with Matt Barkley on the field. So, look, I'm going to stick with the linebackers first, because my second question was going to be about the quarterback situation. But you mentioned Nick Kwiatkowski. How about Leonard Floyd? Good news there. I mean, if there's any good news that came since Sunday, it's that Leonard Floyd, who was taken off on a backboard and went straight to the hospital, you know, was able to be released and go home with the team. And who knows? He may even be able to play this week. I think my big question is, though, you know, whether he plays or not, how much does this, you know, stop the momentum that he was getting with the sacks he was piling up in 4 consecutive games? He didn't get one Sunday, but he did, I think, have the most pressure among all of the outside linebackers in this football game against the Giants. He was still playing pretty well at the time that he suffered this neck injury. So obviously you want to see him come back strong, and you hope that this doesn't stunt his growth the way that all those injuries earlier in the season did.
I would sit him out this game. I'm sure his neck's going to be stiff. I'm sure there's some timidness in his game because, you know, he is being evaluated for a concussion. Did John Fox actually say he has a concussion? Is he in protocol?
Yeah, he is in the concussion protocol.
Okay, so obviously he was concussed a bit, and obviously, you know, those things can vary in severity. So so valuable, was so good for a three or four game stretch. I thought he was, again, pretty good against the Giants, so we'll call it a 4-game stretch. You can see what he can do. Look, get that neck healthy, get that mind clear, let that brain heal a bit, rest him this week, bring him back for the final 5 games. Heck, bring him back for the final 4, monitor his snaps, just make sure he stays healthy and nothing serious happens to him. I think the Bears have a very good player in Leonard Floyd. They have to make sure he exits this season as healthy as he can be.
All right, how about your second question?
Yeah, this is kind of doom and gloomy. What's next in this game? You know, who's next, I should say, because let's face it, the pattern, the biggest trend of this season are big names, key players getting hurt, right? I mean, who is going to be the next player to go down? And I hate to say it, but that's what I'm watching out for, because that's just the story of the season. I mean, even if Jay Cutler finished that game against the Giants, he still came out of it hurt, you know? who's going to be the next key player to go down with an injury? And, look, I hate that I even have this as a question, but, Adam, I mean, the past 2 weeks alone have been so alarming. Kyle Long's taken off on a cart. Leonard Floyd's taken off on a cart. Zach Miller's hopping off the field and throwing his helmet. This does not look good. The trend does not bode well. They are just snake-bitten, bad luck, cursed, whatever. Things just are not going their way. What's next?
Yeah, and I also do believe that the more guys that get banged up, the more vulnerable other people are on the field, because, you know, you start getting to the point where you have so many guys out there that maybe, you know, aren't even really ready to be playing at the NFL level, the level that they're at. And if you're not playing this game at full speed, you're kind of making yourself more vulnerable to injury, if that makes sense. And so I think that, you know, this whole, it's a good question, because it just seems like that's the way the season is going. My second question for this game is the quarterback spot. You know, can Matt Barkley do anything better than he did in Green Bay when they were severely limited offensively? And, you know, where does David Fales fit in this situation going forward? Because I've seen enough of Matt Barkley in you know, the limited amount of times. I don't think either one of these quarterbacks is all that great, and I also don't think that you could just expect David Fales to, you know, pick up the offense and run with it in 1 week like he's going to start on Sunday. Wait, when did they cut him again?
After the final preseason game. I mean, this is a guy who really didn't get a chance at all in the preseason, by the way. Brian Hoyer.
That's right. That's why I'm like completely blanking out like how much of this offense he would already know, which he should actually know a lot of it because he was here all last year. It's been tweaked, obviously, with Loggins. But it's not like he's completely unfamiliar to it. I guess the point I was getting at is you'll probably start Barkley this week, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Fales is actually the better option.
Really?
Yeah. Have you seen Matt Barkley?
I haven't seen David Fales in months. So,
well, he's still an unknown. I'm not trying to say he's a known commodity, but he did, you know, in the past when he got out there in some of those preseason games, give you a little bit of.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Matt Barkley, though, if Cutler can't go, right? This is a guy who's actually been with the team since the start of the season. He's played this season for the Bears. I mean, David Fales barely played in the exhibition game, so I don't know. Is that your bold prediction?
I don't. No, it's not. It's just what, you know, Cam Barkley, I think Barkley gets a start, but does he do anything to the point where you might have to make a change in the middle of the game? That's what I'm worried about. How about, you know what? Fine.
Bold predictions.
David Fales plays a snap on Sunday. At least one snap.
Gosh.
Because what if Barkley gets hurt?
What's that? Well, yeah, he could. Behind that offensive line.
Exactly. Jay Cutler got beat up.
Yeah. Oh. Look, I don't know if I haven't done a full analysis of the Titans yet. I know they're in a young and improving team. I know the Giants have a pretty aggressive front. I mean, whoever's going to be behind center, even if it is Cutler, miraculously, you know, he's going to get thrown about a bit.
Yeah. So, all right. That's my bold prediction. How about you?
I don't know if I have one. Maybe that's the bold prediction. I'm going to say Jordan Howard gets more than 25 carries.
Yeah, well, you know what? If there's a time for that to actually happen, it should be now.
It doesn't sound so bold, but it really is, isn't it? You know,
well,
like it's.
I thought he was going to blow past 20 on Sunday, the way he was running the ball early, and he didn't.
Yeah.
What did he finish with, 17?
17. All five of his carries in the second half. I looked at the film. 8 or 9 men in the box or near the line of scrimmage, you know, 2 or 3 yards off it or whatnot. And, I mean, they sold out to stop him. They were not afraid whatsoever of any of their offensive weapons. Once Zach Miller went down, that entire offense changed. You know, sure, Cutler was banged up a bit, but he did make a couple nice plays, you know, to Josh Bellamy and Marquise Wilson late. But even with those plays and who they were throwing out there, without Zach Miller, the Giants, with a pretty good secondary, did not respect any of their offensive weapons, the Bears' offensive weapons, one bit.
Yeah. You know what? And let's just get this out of the way right now. Bears fans, can we make an agreement not to complain about Dowell Loggins after Sunday's game? Okay? Because what is he supposed to call? Because you just brought it up. 8-9 guys in the box. What do you think the Titans are going to do? And if you
10 guys in the box,
right?
You know,
and if you give Howard the ball 25 times, how many yards you think he even gets over 100?
You know, he may spring one or here or there. You know, he may have like.
But it's going to be hard for him to get over 100 yards even with 25 carries, and that's not blaming him. That's just the reality of the situation. And then it's who is Matt Barkley supposed to throw the ball to if he even has time to throw the ball to somebody right. with the pressure he's going to be under.
Did you see the quote from Landon Collins after the game, basically saying that Zach Miller's loss changed the game dramatically?
It did.
And that, you know, basically Cutler, he said, didn't know who he could throw to. He didn't have anybody. That was, you know, that – I don't know if it's a complete sign of disrespect, but it is what it is. You know, the Giants with the talented secondary knew they had everybody matched up just fine. You know, in the secondary. So, yeah, load the box. That's what the Titans are going to do. Jordan Howard's the best Bears offensive weapon at this point. It's pretty clear and obvious.
At least the guys that Matt Barkley will be throwing the football to are the guys he's been throwing the ball to on the scout team. So he's at least worked with them before because, I mean, that's just it's crazy. That's why this line is 5 points, and I wouldn't be surprised if it continues to go up, which brings us to
predictions.
I think the Titans cover this for sure. Let's say the defense plays okay. I'm going to say this is a 17-9 football game.
I'm going in. God, what did I put in for Pro Football Weekly pick? I think I had 23-16, and heck, that was before there was more uncertainty over Cutler's status. I think Marcus Mariota is going to be a heck of a quarterback. He is definitely, to use a football word, trending, progressing in that direction over the past few weeks. Just a dynamic playmaker, looking like a real pocket passer at times after coming from a gimmicky offense. At Oregon, I think the Titans got something good there. I think he's going to be a better player just to compare to Jameis Winston. He's going to be better than Winston, in my opinion.
Yes! So, someone agrees with me.
Yes.
Remember, I wrote that before the draft, and everyone crushed me because I had Mariota ranked higher than Winston. I said probably early on, Winston's going to look like the better guy, but you give this guy time to develop in an NFL system. Remember, Mariota came from Oregon. I love the ceiling, and I mean, I completely agree with you.
So I think, look, a lot of these games, the Giants game, the Bears are winning. Somehow, yes, it's with Cutler, but the defense keeps the Bears in games. Even with Jarrell Freeman out, I think Nick Kukowski can make a few plays here or there to keep things tight. Danny Trevathan will be there. Obviously, Akeem Hicks and Tracy Porter, and you got some veterans out there that could, you know, help Vic Fangio come up with a pretty decent game plan. But eventually, the tide turns, the talent level shows, and the other team makes more plays to beat the Bears.
Yeah, let me actually change my prediction. 17-6, not 17-9. Because how are they going to get in the field goal range 3 times?
Turnover here or there. You never know.
Maybe they score a touchdown, miss the extra point again, but then kick a field goal. That's how they get to 9.
There you go.
Yeah, that would involve scoring a touchdown, though. Do the Bears score a touchdown?
You know, crazy things happen. I mean, Cody Kessler is throwing touchdown passes this season. You know what I'm saying?
That is something that has happened. All right, let's keep it moving here. What does the Fox say?
They don't cancel the season. They don't, you know, let you skip a month. What the fuck they?
I bet you he wishes they sort of wishes they did at this point because that's how bad it's gotten for the Bears. But nope, they still got to play these last 6 games.
Yeah, you know, my prediction actually for the Pro Football Weekly thing was 23-20. I don't like that pick now. I'm going to change it, at least for the Sun-Times and our podcast. 23, what did I say, 16? But you're right, how are they going to get 16 points? God, look, if Cutler is completely ruled out, Matt Barkley is starting. I mean, I could possibly see maybe them scoring only 3 points.
Yeah.
It could be that bad. The Tennessee Titans could be, you know, walking in and getting an easy win for all we know. I mean, the line's really – it's really gone from what, 1 to 3.5 to 5 now, you said, over a matter of a few days?
Yeah. And it's only Tuesday as we record this right now. I mean, this thing could continue to climb. And if they're scoring 16 points, I think they're getting a defensive touchdown to get to 16. And we know that that's not really something this defense does.
Yeah, maybe they should cancel the season a month early. Gee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
go on.
Yeah,
let's get past the Bears. Let's go.
Yeah,
let's go.
We got other more important things to talk about. It's Thanksgiving. We got Thursday games to discuss, which is another reason why we want to do this podcast early this week. So we can get these on record for before Thanksgiving. An interesting set of games. I'm excited for these games on Thursday. We'll start with the Vikings at Detroit. The Lions are a 2.5-point favorite at home, as they always are on Thanksgiving. This is 11:30 kickoff Thursday on CBS, and this is suddenly an enormous football game.
Yeah, it's the division, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is... Oh, man, the Detroit Lions. How did that team lose to the Chicago Bears?
That's a good question.
Maybe
because they're still
their
Lions.
They're still the Lions, right? You know, Jim Caldwell is coaching for his job. Let's face it. They got the new GM in there from New England. He wants to change. It's like the old Lovey situation from a few years ago, right? You give the guy a year, see what he can do, save the organization some money. But now he goes out there, starts winning some football games, and all of a sudden you get a tough decision on your hands. So, look, I think the Lions are going to win this game. I think they're going to cover. I think the Vikings, they've been better, but they're still, look, they don't have a lot of things going offensively. I think Stephon Diggs has been pretty electric. I think he got shut down a bit last week, but they don't have much going on. Lions.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Jim Caldwell, and it's interesting. If you go back to the end of last season, this team is 12 and 4 in their last 16 games. That's pretty impressive. They finished last year 6-2, and so far this season they are 6-4. Right? They do that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
He's coaching to save his job, man. That's really his situation, and he's got the team. I mean, I don't know if the Lions can learn something from the Bears. Maybe the Bears should have held on to Lovie Smith maybe one more year or something. You know what I'm saying? So, Jim Caldwell, I know the NFC North is pretty bad. But, I mean, if he can win the division and get that team into the playoffs, how do you let him go?
They've also won 5 out of their last 6 games. Their only loss is at Houston.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad loss. So, you know, that's all since they lost to the Bears at Soldier Field. So, you know, I don't know how you fire this guy when he's on that kind of a run. What else do you want? You know, what else do you expect? This is certainly not a perfect roster that he's dealing with. So at home against Minnesota here, and you're taking the Lions even with the 2.5 points, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
The Vikings did bounce back and end their losing streak by beating Arizona at home. We both had the Cardinals in that game last week. You know, I think I'm gonna take the Vikings here, because I still think the Vikings overall have the better roster, despite their offensive problems, especially on that offensive line. And maybe the Lions are just due for a loss here. I mean, come on, 5 out of the last 6. I think the Vikings. Remember, these two teams played just 3 weeks ago, and it was in Minnesota. The Lions beat the Vikings in overtime, despite, you know, that was like kind of at the peak of the problems the Vikings were having. And I think that they're better off now than they were 3 weeks ago when these two teams played. So I'm all right. Yeah, I'm gonna.
I'm glad we're different.
Yeah. Hey, you did pick up one game on me last week, by the way.
See,
you're still four games behind.
It's coming. Four games ain't too bad, man.
Four games behind.
Hey, like Fox said, they're not canceling last month of the season, Adam. We got a lot of time.
That's good news for you. That's good news for you. All right. Now, moving on Thursday, these are all Thanksgiving games right now. 3:30 kickoff on Fox on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys, 7-point favorite at home against Washington, a full touchdown and an extra point. That's a lot of points.
It's a ton of points. Ton of points. And I know the Packers kind of suck, but they do suck.
Yeah.
But Kirk Cousins, he's impressive. He's going to get paid this year. Yeah. Did you see him hug his GM and pat his GM on the head and say, "How do you like me now?"
Yeah.
You know, how about that?
He's bold, man.
Oh, man. I know he gets kind of caught up in the moment. What did he have last year? How do you like that? Was that what he was screaming at?
You like that.
You like that. I love it. I love it. And I like Kirk Cousins. I like what he's doing there. I don't know if they're going to beat the Cowboys, but give me those 7 points. They'll keep this game tight.
Yeah, I agree with you here. You know, Washington's another team. They've only lost one out of, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, one out of their last 8 games. They only have one loss. Now, they'd have a tie in there against Cincinnati, but this is still a team that is 6-1-1 in their last 8 games. That's no. I know the Cowboys are playing great, but that team, that 6-1-1, is a 7-point underdog here, even on the road. That seems like way too much for me. So I'm with you. I'm taking Washington in this game. These are rivals. I think it's a short week, so that contributes to weird things kind of happening here. So I like Washington to kind of keep their momentum going into Dallas again. I don't know if they win that game, but I do like them to cover. Okay, then the nightcap, another team here dealing with quarterback issues that has impacted the point spread. And let me double check to make sure that there hasn't been a change with this one. And there has a major point spread, because earlier today, Andrew Luck, it kind of got leaked out that he's probably not going to play in this game. It's the Steelers at the Colts. Colts playing good football, 7:30 start on NBC on Thanksgiving evening. But here's the thing. This line, since I wrote it down earlier in the day, the Colts were already a 3-point underdog. They're now a 9-point underdog at home.
Wow.
A 9-point underdog at home, as Scott Tolzien, the former Badger, is probably...
former friend product.
You're right.
From high school.
Local product here in Chicago. But he's going to be getting the start against the Steelers. 9 points.
God, that's a lot of points. Steelers? Give me Steelers. Give me the Steelers.
Yeah.
It's a lot of points. Crazy things happen in short weeks. I think bad things are going to happen for the Colts without Andrew Luck. They may not score a point. They may be in the Bears situation. Same boat. Yeah, give me the Steelers, even giving up 9.
Yeah, I think this is, as much as I love Scott Tolzien personally, it's a big drop-off from Andrew Luck, especially when the guy, you know, hardly has played in his NFL career, Tolzien. So, you know, the Steelers are flawed. The Colts, I still think, are flawed, even though they've been playing better as of late. The Steelers team did just lose 4 in a row before beating Cleveland last week, but it was kind of a tough stretch in their schedule facing the Dolphins, Patriots, Ravens, and Cowboys in those 4 games. Man, 9.
And Big Ben was missing for some of those games,
yeah,
too, wasn't he?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, he missed one of those games, the one against the Patriots. It's hard to pick the Steelers as a 9-point favorite on the road against a decent football team. But I'm with you. I think you have to in this situation with the problems that the Colts offense probably going to have in this game with Scott Tolzien. All right, and then we move on to Sunday now. We jump ahead, and this is the Sunday night game, 7:30 on NBC. This is a big one. Out west, the AFC West, it's the Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos. The Broncos, a 3.5-point favorite at home.
I don't know how I feel about this one.
It's a tough game.
The Chiefs just lost, right? Weren't they on a long winning streak and they just lost?
Yes.
It wasn't a 7 games in a row they won, right? 6 in a row, something like
they
that.
They won 5 games in a row.
5 in a row.
5 in a row, and then they lost at home to Tampa last week, which was a surprising result.
So I don't know what's going on in Kansas City. Denver's I still think to Denver even with Trevor Siemian at quarterback is a very competent, very capable football team. At home Sunday night, Chiefs are kind of reeling a bit. Give me the Broncos, even with the 3.5. Give me the Broncos.
Yeah, I think so too. They've found a way to win these games at home specifically. They've only lost one game at home this year. That was to the Atlanta Falcons. Otherwise, you know, they took care of the Texans at home. They took care of their division rival Chargers at home. They beat the Panthers on opening night, going back all the way to the beginning of the season. So at home, their defense kind of seems to give them enough to win these football games. And, man, though, the 3.5 is an interesting number, because I still think the Chiefs are a really good football team, enough to keep this thing close. So actually, you know what? I'm going to reverse course here. We need to differ here, right? We need a couple of games where we're different.
This is good. Do it. Keep going.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Chiefs.
Good. I'm glad you did, my friend.
Just trying to build my lead on you.
Yeah. We're gaining. Listen, folks, we're gaining.
Yeah, I think you've gained on me one game in the last 3 weeks. So you are
progress.
Gaining.
But we call that progressing in the NFL world, Adam. Progressing.
All right, let's fire through these final games here. One more NFL game to get to. The Packers are reeling. They're on the road at Philadelphia on Monday Night Football. Another 3.5-point spread here. The Eagles are the favorites.
Let me hear a little Vince Vaughn, if you can.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
I like the Packers.
Oh, I thought you were locking up the Eagles.
No. I have the Eagles strike me as average now. You know, they came out, surprised a lot of teams early on. I think they're now last in their division, are they not?
Yeah, so, but they're still 5-5.
Still Carson Wentz has, look, anybody can move the ball on the Packers defense, but I still think Carson Wentz has come back to earth a bit. He is, to use the football words again, trending in that direction. So give me the Packers. I like them with the points. It's the points, yeah. Adam. You know, I don't know if they're going to win, you know, but give me those 3.5 points.
Okay. I am going to do the opposite of you.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Give me the Eagles, okay, who I don't know if you know this, are undefeated at home this year and haven't just won those games by a little, but they've won them by a lot. Mm-hmm. They beat their Browns by 19. They beat the Steelers by 31. They beat the Vikings by 11. And they beat the Falcons, that was just 2 weeks ago, by 9 at home. So the Packers, who all of a sudden are really bad, apparently, lock me up some Eagle.
See, I actually like that stat, working towards the Packers. Something's got to – I've always believed in the theory that something's got to give, right? Okay. Something's got to break in the opposite direction. And if the Packers are going to rescue their season at some point – I'm not saying they're going to win. I think they could lose by 2 points, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, actually – giving you what I just gave you, it almost seems like the Eagles should be favored by more than they are. So maybe that's working in your favor. A little fishy spread there. I don't know. I'm trying to reach for you. But we got another game there that we differ on. So that's 3 this week, including our locks. We're going Oppo. So we'll see if you make up some ground. I doubt it. All right, we wrap things up with our college picks this week. It's rivalry week. We got three really good rivalry games for you. And then one that still matters a lot for at least one of the teams involved. And we'll start there locally. Illinois is at Northwestern, at Ryan Field on Saturday. And the Cats need to win to get bowl eligible. Illinois will not be bowl eligible this year, but it is Lovie Smith's first rivalry experience against Northwestern, and I'm sure he and the Illini would love to come into Evanston and spoil the Cats' bowl hopes.
16.5 points, though.
I know. That seems like a lot.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Even, like, Illinois is garbage. I mean, they're not a good football team. You know, there's not a good thing you could really say about Lovie Smith's fighting the Illini right now, but Northwestern, do you trust them? I think they're going to win this game. Let me just start off by saying that. But can they outscore their opponent by 16.5 points in this game?
The answer is yes. Do I trust them, though, is a different question.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Here's the deal, and I think I've explained this a couple times this season, but maybe not every week. But they're two different offenses. I'm talking about Northwestern. Okay, they have two different offenses. One offense is very explosive when their offensive line blocks. The other doesn't score at all when their offensive line doesn't block, and that's what happened in Minnesota on Saturday. And there doesn't seem to be you've used the word trending a lot in this podcast. They don't seem to trend. They just randomly, they're kind of bipolar, that offensive line.
They just are.
they're either really good, like they were against, you know, Ohio State, and they almost won that game, or at Michigan State when they scored over 50 points, or when they went on the road and beat Iowa this year, and the offense looked explosive, or they just really bad, and they lose to Illinois State, and they only score 7 points, or they can't score at Minnesota last week and they lose that game. So if that offensive line blocks, I absolutely think they're going to beat Illinois by 17 points to get over that 16.5 point spread. If they don't, they could lose this game. They could very well lose this game to Illinois, as crazy as that sounds.
Look, I don't think they're going to lose. I think they'll book themselves another bowl appearance. I think you'll be traveling somewhere, my friend. But I like the Illini. Maybe Northwestern wins by two touchdowns. You know, whatever. 28-14, something like that. Still a very decisive victory for Pat Fitzgerald. You know, another blow to Lovie Smith's recruiting efforts. But Lovie covers. That's what I'm going with.
Okay. I trusted both of these teams to cover last week. They both let me down. I'm gonna go with Northwestern here though, and here's the deal that I can, as some insider information from being in the position I am on Saturdays on the sideline, not that it's like private info, but at the end of last week's game, Pat Fitzgerald quickly shook Tracy Clay's, the head coach at Minnesota, his hand, and ran off the field, it looked like, and some took it as like, oh, that was a quick handshake. You know, what's going on there? But the reality was he was just trying to position himself in front of the tunnel to the locker room because Pat Fitzgerald not stopped every single player, but made a point of saying to every single player as they walked off the field on Saturday to make a decision, we're going to win next week. So his message right away was, we're moving on from this one, have to beat Illinois. That's what it's all about now. I like that mentality of moving on right away and not dwelling on what happened on Saturday in Minnesota. So I'm going to say that the good Northwestern shows up. The good Northwestern shows up, and they obliterate Illinois like they should.
By 17 points.
By 17 points. All right, moving on. The Apple Cup, the good old Apple Cup. It's nice to have this game matter. How about this? Number 6, Washington at number 2, Washington State. The reason why we're bringing this one to you is because this is huge college football playoff implications. Washington currently sits at number 5, just outside the top 4. But Ohio State plays Michigan, and that's one of the games we're obviously going to talk about here momentarily. But one of those two teams is going to lose. And if Washington can beat Washington State, they're probably going to move into the top 4. And there's a number of other teams like Wisconsin right behind Washington that are going to be watching this one closely to see if Washington State can pull off the upset. The Cougars are at home. This game is in Pullman. They're number 22 in the country. Mike Leach has that team playing very well. There's a 2:30 game Friday. This is a Friday game after Thanksgiving on Fox. It's going to be a very fun game to watch on Friday. Washington State, a 6-point underdog at home.
I love the playoff implications. Huge. I love the college playoff. Can I just say that to begin with?
Yeah,
I get some of the complaints about them. I think maybe you do expand it at some point, but I love that all these games matter. I love how there's going to be a Final Four and then they're going to play for a national title. I love how there's some type of tournament, something that resembles a tournament now for college football. Huge game. Both these teams have pretty good cornerbacks. Look, I'm not an expert on Pac-12 football. What is it, Jake Browning at Washington?
Very good player.
Who's the kid at Washington State? Luke Falk or something like that?
Yep. Yeah, Luke Falk is the Cougars quarterback, and he is very explosive numbers. I mean, I think he has 30-something touchdowns this year. He's averaging almost 400 yards per game through the air. They're a very one-dimensional offense, the Cougars are, but you mentioned the corners, the secondaries in this game. Washington has very talented cornerbacks. They could cover with just rushing 4. You know, on the back end, their secondary might still be able to cover this Washington State passing attack, but can they get pressure with just 4 players rushing Luke Falk? That's the big question in this game. You know, if Falk has time to throw the football, guys are going to get open. This is a very tough matchup to analyze. So ultimately, because Washington, we saw what they did to Stanford. That was a home night game, though. This one's on the road. Rivalry. Things happen. 6 points. I'm going to take the 6 points. I'm going with Washington State here.
With the points, right?
Yes.
Do you think they'll win?
I think they have a chance. Yeah, I think they have a very good chance to actually win this football game outright. So if you're going to give me 6 points, it's an easy pick for me.
All right, give me Washington.
Okay. Just to be different.
Just to be different.
By the way, we are tied when it comes to college football picks. We are tied 23-16-1 straight up. You got one on me last week, and that's where the real battle is.
So we just differed on 2 games now, right? I got Illinois with the points.
Yeah, we did.
And I'm picking Washington and my friend Jake Browning to cover.
You are.
Let's do it.
All right. The second third college game we are picking. The second rivalry game between 2 ranked opponents that we're picking. This is Auburn, number 15 in the country, kind of almost written off at the beginning of the year. They've stormed back. They're a pretty good football team. They're going on the road to their big rival in the Iron Bowl, number 1, Alabama, 17-point favorite. It seems like every time we've had an Alabama game on our picks this year, it's been at least 17-point spread. So, at home, too, can they cover 17 against their rival? Talent-wise, they should, but this is a rivalry game.
Yeah, so crazy things happen. I get it. But look, I honestly think the SEC is down. I really think so. Believe that. And I think Alabama, I mean, how many times have we talked about this? Arkansas, Texas A&M, right? All these teams could come in and not maybe beat Alabama, but cover that spread and keep things tight. And yes, you got glimpses of that happening. But Alabama, not even an overly talented Alabama team in their, you know, from their perspective, right? I don't know if right now they look overloaded with NFL prospects as they have been in the past, if you know what I'm saying, right? But, again, like you said, every time we've had to pick one of their games on this podcast, I've always picked the Alabama to cover, and they've never let me down. So give me Crimson Tide and some Nick Saban.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I agree with you. The SEC is down, but Alabama is not down. They're as dominant as they've been. under Nick Saban. They're loaded still, and I think there's a gap between them and even Ohio State and Michigan. The more I watch those two teams, they have flaws too, and I'm not sure Alabama has an obvious flaw. However, this is a rivalry game, and how many times have I told you weird things happen in November? Now, I'm not saying Auburn's going to win this game, although I'm at least allowing that to be an open possibility in my brain. I am going to pick Auburn to cover, though. This is an Alabama team that is dominant and as good as they are. They have really not been tested lately. And other than a 48-43 win against Mississippi all the way back in September, they haven't even really played a close game. Now, that speaks to their dominance. But the point I'm getting at is every team, I don't care how good you are, has a clunker at some point, or a game where they come out and they don't necessarily play their best and they have to overcome it and win the football game. I think that's this game for Alabama. And I think it's ultimately going to help them win the national championship, getting tested like they're going to be at home on Saturday. It's a 2:30 game on CBS, by the way. But also going into this prediction, they've had two really easy games the last 2 weeks against Mississippi State and Chattanooga. Okay, so there's almost sort of like this cruise control mentality, I think, right now with Alabama. So I think Auburn comes out, you know they're going to give them their best, and I think that this one's closer than most believe, and I think Auburn covers.
Okay, but Auburn doesn't win. You used the word clunker for Alabama.
Yeah, just in terms of not playing up to their ability for four quarters.
Gotcha.
And having to sweat it out in the fourth. But you do that against a rival, and weird things happen, especially in the Iron Bowl. Kick six. We saw it. Weird things happen.
Yep.
So, boy, if Alabama went down on Saturday, that would throw this whole thing. It would make things crazy, but it still wouldn't, because Alabama would still get in the college football playoff even with just one loss to Auburn, and they're still going to go on in the SEC championship game and still have a chance to rebound from it. So, you know, in that regard, I think that's the difference between the difference between the BCS and the college football playoff. But, you know, I even with the BCS, I think if Alabama lost this game and then went on to win the SEC championship, they'd probably still be in the top two. So
yeah,
it's not really that big of a difference. I'm just saying, watch out for Auburn a little bit. They could keep this thing closer. All right, this is the big game of the weekend. It's number two, Ohio State, hosting number three, Michigan, on Saturday. It's kind of weird that they always play this at 11 a.m. noon local time.
They always have, though, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's always.
Yeah, that's what they do. This seems like it should be the primetime game, but it is early. It is 11 a.m. It is up against Illinois Northwestern, but it's a huge game. And it's Ohio State and Michigan, 6.5 points. If Michigan loses, very good chance that they're knocked out. Well, really, the loser of this game, very good chance they're knocked out of the college football playoff. So this is, you know, sort of a de facto playoff game for these two teams.
Yep. I don't know how I feel about it. I look, my cousin played for Ohio State, right? The past few years, he was a national championship. So my bias leans towards Urban Meyer and the Buckeyes. I don't think they're as talented as they have been in the past. I think they could be very still dynamic and explosive. They still got all these blue chip recruits. But you know what Jim Harbaugh is doing in Michigan right now, I don't know if destiny is the right word, but I mean, he's really changed their path so quickly, so abruptly. And he doesn't even have a full boat of his players into his school at this point, right? Look, I don't know if they're going to win, the Wolverines, but I think they can cover that 6.5 spread and keep this game very tight, very interesting to the very end.
I agree with you. Because the big matchup in this game to me is Michigan's run defense against Ohio State's run offense, which is really what Ohio State does best. And so I think that that's going to make things difficult for Ohio State in this game, because JT Barrett is going to be really tested to throw the football And the reason why I think Ohio State's ultimately going to win is because of JT Barrett. I think they have the better quarterback and they're at home. So I think the edge does swing towards the Buckeyes in the actual football game. But 6.5 points here, knowing that this is a rivalry game, and I mentioned the playoff implications, but Michigan also needs to win this game to get to the Big Ten championship game, whereas Ohio State needs some help, too. They need Michigan State to beat Penn State, so it's not just a win and they're in type deal. However, it might actually work out in Ohio State's favor if they win this football game to not have to go play that extra game, because they'll still be in the college football playoff with probably the number two seed. I just think all of this, especially when you look at these matchups, Michigan's going to have a chance. I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of scoring in this game with two good defenses, but I agree with you. I think Michigan does cover the 6.5.
Right. I don't know if they're going to win. I think Ohio State actually does win, but that 6.5, give it to the Wolverines. That's what I'm taking.
We took a lot of time here with picks, but I think it was worth it. I mean, you look at these football games. What a great slate on Thanksgiving. There's even some college games on Thanksgiving that you could watch. But a good NFL slate on Thanksgiving. There's good games on Friday, headlined by Washington and Washington State, the Apple Cup. You also, Big Ten fans have Iowa and Nebraska, which is, you know, delivered with some pretty good football games the last few years since those teams started hooking up on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And then Saturday, I mean, locally, you got Illinois Northwestern, and then nationally, two big games with the Iron Bowl and the game, Michigan and Ohio State. So what a fun weekend of football.
And you got the Illinois State High School Championships in football.
That's true. Well,
the big news is whether Fenwick is in that game on Saturday.
Right. At the time of this recording, that still has not been resolved. And how about Vernon Hills, where I live? Yeah. They're in the 3A championship. So...
Well, quickly, let me ask you, before we depart, for Thanksgiving here, I know you really love your officiating, Mr. Hoag.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this Fenwick situation? If people don't know the backstory here, so they played Plainfield North in the semifinal, a 7A semifinal. On the final play of regulation, Fenwick's up 10-7, I believe. They're up 3 points,
yeah,
right?
10-7.
The final play of regulation, they just throw the football to kill the clock. It's called intentional grounding. Plainfield North was given an extra play. They kick a field goal, they go in overtime, and they eventually win. Now, they should have never have gotten that attempted play with no time remaining in regulation to kick that field goal. Fenwick should have won the game. The refs blew the call. The IHSA admitted it. The IHSA apologized for it, and they're not reversing it. Plainfield North is still going to the final, where they're going to play East St. Louis. So Fenwick, in my mind, got completely screwed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Fenwick should be playing in this championship game. This is not – I've gotten in arguments with people on Twitter about it in the last few days. This is not a missed call. This is – and it's not a missed call – it's not a missed call in the middle of a game, because that's what I think the main counter argument has been is, well, there's missed calls throughout a game. You can't just change the outcomes of games because of something that happens. Like, what if something happened with 5 minutes left? That's not this situation, though. Stop bringing up hypotheticals. This is a situation where the clock was literally at zero, okay? And they invented a rule. They essentially invented a rule that didn't exist to give Palatine North, I'm sorry, Plainfield North. By the way, one of my good buddies teaches at Plainfield North, so I've had some interesting conversations with him this week about this whole situation. But they've essentially created a rule to get them an extra play that never should have happened. You know, the game was actually over. Fenwick actually won the football game based on the rules. So I think Fenwick should be playing for the state championship.
Yeah, I agree. It's in court. And hey, we're private school guys.
Adam. Yeah, we are. I'm a Catholic guy too.
Yeah, this is the state, the public schools using their legislative branch or whatever, their muscle to screw another private school from going to another state title game.
That's right.
Because they can't do it. So That's the way I see it. You know, just it's to be honest, though, you know, the kids, this is like a dream. Some of my fondest memories still in my life. I'm well into my 30s now. Are still playing high school football. And I was on a team that went 4-5. Those are some of the fondest memories of my life.
Yeah.
To have your dreams kind of shattered this way by a bunch of guys sitting in an office referring to some bylaws that are pretty much unfair because it's just not common sense. It's just a bad look for everybody involved. You know, Plainfield North in the name of sportsmanship should step down from this game. It's just an ugly look for all.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme measure, but one that if it comes down to it, ultimately should be what happens, because it is the right thing. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to do. The bottom line is I just feel bad for both the players on both schools, because it's certainly not fair to Fenwick in a game that they won, that they should not be robbed of the opportunity to play in a state championship game. But also, you know, even the players on Plainfield North, it's not their fault that the ref screwed this up and awarded them a win and they went off to celebrate and they've been working, you know, this week to play in a state championship. So you reverse it, then those guys get robbed too. Not as much robbed, because they actually didn't win the football game, but it's still, you know, emotionally, you know, a disappointment for them, and they're going to feel like it's unfair. And it is unfair. It's unfair that both of the players have to experience that this week, because this is not what it should feel like when you're in this situation and have an opportunity to play for the state championship. I mean, you talk about distractions. What a huge distraction for Plainfield North as they try to prepare for a game that maybe they won't even play in. And by the way, this will probably all be resolved by the time people listen to this, but that's still our thoughts on the issue. Because
we just got to make it clear.
Yeah.
The Catholic school is getting screwed again.
That's right. All right, that's going to do it here on episode 66 of Intentional Grounding, the Clyde Bulldog Turner episode. Again, looking forward to a awesome weekend of football, except maybe the Bears game. Take a break on Sunday. You know, you got enough to watch on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Take the day off Sunday. Get some work done around the house. You'll feel better about your Sunday that way, probably. All right. Again, follow us on Twitter at Adam Hoge, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Follow the podcast at INT Grounding Pod. You can read us at WGNRadio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. And if you don't already, listen to The Smart Way. Go to iTunes, search Intentional Grounding, subscribe there. And please, if you like the podcast, please rate it and review it there. We appreciate you doing that. It helps the podcast get a little bit more exposure. All righty, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back on Sunday. Bears, Titans. Again, take Sunday off, then just listen to the podcast a little bit later in the day. We'll talk to you then, Sunday.